What's going on, football fans? It's me, J.R. Clark, back again with another Pound for Pound ATL Live, joined as always by my main man, Jonathan Holder. Jonathan, what's going on, brother?
Man, it is a wonderful Tuesday. I got the week off. Just got back from a weekend trip to Tybee Island, spending it on the beach, eating some good seafood.
Jealous.
I've never had flounder, so I had some fried flounder.
Flounder's good stuff. Yeah, flounder's good stuff.
I had some calamari, which I love. I had a $17 hot dog.
What?
What are they? Okay.
Yeah. Please explain what they can do to a hot dog to make it worth $17.
So the hot dog itself was Wagyu beef.
Okay.
The bun, I think it was like a brioche bun, okay. But it was really not, it was very good. And then they had like their homemade, whatever chili they do. And then there was like a crema sauce on top of that. So I was told that's kind of like, almost like a sour cream-ish thing.
Yeah, crema is
with some cilantro on top. But yeah, I had that. But like the highlight for me was we got a hotel right on the beach. Woke up every day, looked out the window off the balcony. There was the ocean.
There it is.
The day after we got there, Saturday, we spent the entire first half of the day from like 10 a.m. to like 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, sitting on the beach, getting out in the ocean, had some music going on under the umbrella, drinking some beers. It was like one of the best days and best weekends that I've had in a very, very long time. And it was all to celebrate my beautiful wife's birthday. And so it was an awesome, awesome weekend. So.
Well, good deal. I'll make sure that you let her know that we said happy birthday.
Will do.
Yeah, I spent the weekend out at a campsite not too far from the house. It's a Jellystone themed. So Yogi Bear and Boo Boo and all them. And so I did that for the kids, and they had a great time. We had a fun time, camping, obviously. MJ, he's over here. Says, $17 hot dog. we know we got all the money. That's it.
No, that I was able to pay for that $17 hot dog because I saved for 3 months before.
There it is. Oh man. But yeah, no, it is we had a pretty good time as far as that went. The weather cooperated. The last time we went camping, we woke up with 2 inches of rain inside the tent. It's not where you want it. No. This time, much better. Much better.
I will say the day we got there, Friday night, it was when we went out to this place. It's called Seawolf on Tybee Island. And this is where I had the $17 hot dog. She had another hot dog as well, but it was like $16, and it looked good too. But the place we went to, we got there and we were sitting out on the deck waiting for a table inside, and there were two people in front of us. So we ended up probably waiting for about 20, 25 minutes, but about 10 minutes into that, like a bad storm started to roll in. There was a lightning strike. I can't say for sure exactly where it hit. That thing went off, literally felt like it went off like right on top of my head. I felt it all like just pushed through my chest. Ugh. And the hairs on my arm stood up, and I swear to God, tingled. It was loud.
You know what that means? It was way too close.
It was way too close. Way too close.
Our friends, Out of Your Falcon Mind says, hey guys, been a minute. Glad to catch y'all live. Glad you're here. But it's this last part right here. It says, been a busy summer. Dude, you ain't lying. You ain't lying, guys. It has been a busy summer. Life has been fun and full of it, which has been nice because we're in the down period. Not a ton to talk about. Well, we got some stuff to talk about today. So I guess without further ado, we might as well just get into it. So we start off this whole this particular episode with it's the time of year where you're like the guys are starting to go on what I would call like radio row. Yep. Some of the guys are starting to make appearances on different like either TV shows, Sirius XM, things like that. And our stalwart veteran Grady Jarrett, who was on Good Morning Football on the NFL Network, talking about the upcoming season, talking about what has got him excited. And like I always like when our guys, especially when it's our veteran guys, get on these shows, I don't tune into these shows live, but I try to catch these clips because I like to hear how our guys like represent themselves and represent the team. You know that a lot of these guys, especially these veteran dudes, once they start getting towards that, I'd say not the end of their career, but towards the back end of their career, they start doing more of these stuff as part of like after the life of football training. You know, it's a program that the NFL itself has, and I think it's a smart program. And so anyway, anytime we get our guys on there, I like to try to catch them. Grady represented us well, obviously, as he always does. And yeah, they asked him like, what he thought about, the talent that had been brought in. And he, I believe he brought up Onyemata's name, the impact of Calais Campbell. And, they asked him, like, who should you be watching out for? And one of the first people out of his mouth was Drake London, which was an interesting for him, a defensive guy, to, bring up Drake London's name as someone to, keep an eye out on. It was encouraging. Because I'm always interested to hear who these people talk about when they're not specifically asked about a certain person. When they get asked just who's impressing you and like what name do they bring up? And for a defensive leader, especially a D lineman, to bring up the wide receiver, I thought that was encouraging.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a guy. Like, it doesn't surprise me that that name would jump to his lips when asked that question. I think when you see the kind of chemistry that they were able to build in just the last four games between Desmond Ridder and himself, and the kind of explosion that his numbers took once Ridder became the starter, I think, even without Grady saying anything about it, because we've said it already, up to this point, is Drake London is a guy that we expect to kind of take that next step.
Right.
Really show out a lot more this year and become a guy that is going to be on everybody's, lips, coming out of everybody's mouth as this season unfolds. Getting it from that defensive leader, it's a guy that while he's likely just a lot is being focused on the defense, this is definitely a guy that stands out to him, and his star is shining brightly for him. So like hearing that is a good confirmation of what we kind of all have already felt, in right. that realm too. So,
and then he was asked, he was either on a different segment. I don't think it was Good Morning Football, but he was doing the rounds at NFL Network. And he was asked by, what one word did he use to describe Desmond Ridder? And like right off the rip, he said confident, which I found, and the way he talked about him afterwards, the amount of games that Ridder has won, in college, and seeing it translate that confidence translating, in the pro world, in the locker room. Like MJ states here, he says Grady was backing our boy Desmond. He said people will be surprised this year, but the team won't be. And that was definitely the feeling, that even though with the offseason narrative as was what it was about Lamar Jackson and trying to tie us to every other quarterback, this team has from like end of season has been behind Ridder the whole time. And it's not just from the, front office and coaching staff, the players are echoing it. And also, like, even players that haven't been here, like, to hear what Calais Campbell says, hey, like, we sat down and watched film, and what did they watch film? And it wasn't of the defense. It was of Desmond Ritter and the plan that they had, you know, to bring Ritter along and make sure that it's successful. Like, the hearing all this continuing to compound has, you know, really should have Falcons fans feeling good about this upcoming season, at least from a quarterback standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't really think about it at the time, but like thinking back on it now, like when we went to the Benz and we watched them practice, like looking back on like him practicing there, like you could feel that. You could feel the confidence. Like he wasn't, like he was just letting it rip. He wasn't, didn't seem like he was a guy who was under pressure to, I got to make sure that this throw's perfect. Otherwise, right. They're going to bring in this guy. And he just didn't feel like there was anything like that for him. And when he's talked, he's talked like a guy that he's just going out and doing the job.
That's it.
And this is his job to do. So he's going to go out and do it to the best of his ability. Whether or not that translates at the end of the day to being a successful quarterback in the NFL, we'll see. But the confidence is there. Right? Yeah, the confidence is there of like, I know that I'm going to do the best that I can possibly do. I'm not going to, half-ass it, And I think that comes across from him to the team. And they see it, and he knows he's got the backing of the coaches. He's got the backing of his backup quarterback because the guy knows, like, hey, I'm coming in to be his backup. That job, I'm going to do that job to the best of my ability. There's no, animosity there.
No, yeah.
At least that outwardly that we can see. So
right, and even Grady was asked about, Heinicke, and he even brought up the fact that Heinicke has beat the Falcons twice. So it's kind of nice to have, a guy that they know is capable if needed to be to come in, which is what they want. I get Nick's, sentiment here, not just words, please. Right now, and until live bullets start flying, we're pontificating. We're trying to extrapolate off of, what we are seeing, what we are hearing. With what we are hearing is, it seems like, okay, before we get into the next one, I wanted to bring up, I don't know if y'all saw the Dan Orlovsky tweet about the Falcons offense. And I thought, to me, I really feel like the national media has finally got off their, the horse of wanting another, trying to have the storyline of Lamar Jackson or whatever in Atlanta. And they're finally deciding to actually look at it and see, okay, what is here? Why did they decide not to go after Lamar in any significant way? And they're starting to see some of the things that we have been saying for a while. And I don't need national media's validation, but it is nice to hear other people echo some of the things that you have said and makes you go, okay, cool. I'm not absolutely crazy or I'm not completely off my rocker, but pointing out some of the types of throws that Ritter made last season and what this, offense is probably going to live off of. Dan Orlovsky was talking about mainly the attacking the seams and the different ways that, Arthur Smith is probably going to want to attack the seams with throws like that, that Ritter is comfortable with. And yes, that is the middle of the field is where every quarterback really wants to live. Those are, that's where your eyes immediately go when you're playing. Look, any of y'all who play Madden, can probably attest to the throws that you make on a consistent basis are the ones that go across the middle of the field. The ones that go across you have to almost force yourself to look down the sidelines or to look deep in occasions, but those crossers coming across, that's where you naturally go to anyway. So with that being said, Yeah, the seams are definitely what they're going to want to attack. And between that, it's the seams and the sidelines, right?
Yep.
Because,
well, the seams, if you can be proficient with the seam passes and just things over the middle of the field, especially as a young quarterback, then the game is much, I'm not gonna say it's easy. It's easier, right? Because that's like the young quarterbacks that come up that you see that don't, that are either not very successful early on, and maybe they learn to over time and, you know, become like the journeyman backups, whatever. But even if they, but if they don't, they kind of just don't make it in the league. Is the like having to work over the middle can be really difficult because there's a lot of bodies there. That's the biggest hurdle, is being able to put, have enough touch to get over the linebackers, but under the safeties.
Yeah, I'm about to say being able to layer your throws.
Yes.
Like, yeah, I know, so y'all hear that all the time, like, you know, layering throws, and that's what they're talking about, over the linebackers in front of the, you know, in front of the safeties. And if you can dial those in, dude, you can eat, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. But that's why you see a lot of young quarterbacks, like, a lot of their early throws when they start games, or even, you know, a lot of just a majority of their throws a lot of times are like the outs, the quick outs, the quick ends, you know, I don't know if that's what they're called, but like just a little short, or the tunnel screens or things like that, where you just got one guy, usually one guy that you got to beat. Or you got to throw a ball over or something to that effect. Whereas when you're in the middle of the field, you potentially got to have, you know, you're throwing it over two or three guys that are in a line in front of you. Or you may have to throw in between those guys or whatever. But there's just so many more bodies and so many more moving things to take account of that, you know, being able to process that at a you know, early age, as a young quarterback, is a major bonus. And so far he has shown that he can do that.
Yeah.
And that is a strength of his game. And if that continues and progresses and becomes even better than it already is, then that just bodes well for the offense in general. And is going to open up a lot of other things. So
now, yeah, you talk about, like, you know, boding well for the offense in general. Another thing that's going to bode well for, and it's really starting to get even more prevalent, is, you know, the love for Bijan Robinson, the love for him and the situation that he's landed in. Now I'm going to attempt to see, hopefully the sound comes through. So, all right. I don't know if y'all saw this one or not. This is from James Palmer, tweeted this out earlier today. It's also from the NFL Network. So let's see. Y'all have to tell me if y'all can hear this or not.
It's real low. Let's at least see. For me. I don't know about the stream.
Let's see. Happens. Okay.
Bijan Robinson. I think the situation you land in is always so important. He's taken eighth overall to a team that wants to use him a lot. And I think Arthur Smith is a perfect fit. Now, what I was told by people down there watching him throughout OTAs and through minicamp, it wasn't him as a running back. It was, this guy is going to be a hell of a weapon for us. It was in the passing game and the mismatches that they already saw on the field. They knew that he could be a weapon used in a variety of ways, but when they had a chance to see it firsthand during OTAs and minicamp, he exceeded their expectations, I'm told. And this is a backfield that already has other backs, but they can split the load with, they can also carry the football, that allows him to be able to be playing in different spots in a scheme for a head coach that knows how to use running backs. I think it's a perfect fit.
Yeah, so that is that was something that really, like I said, it really seems like the national media is finally catching up to what we have been saying for a while. You know, when we drafted Bijan eighth overall, you know, Nick is saying here, you know, Bijan's not just a running back. No.
Yep.
And a lot of times with, you know, these, you know, offensive weapons, whatever you want to call them, whatever player it is, whether it's offense, defense, it doesn't matter, is the situation that they land in is so defining to their, you know, to the trajectory of their career. Now, you get a guy like, you know, a Saquon Barkley. When he landed in New York, they pretty much had nothing.
Yep.
So, like, you're feeding Saquon pretty much every play. And that was a lot of wear on him in a very short, you know, short amount of time. Kind of same deal with Ezekiel Elliott. Didn't down there with Dallas. So you just kept feeding Ezekiel. So yep. Now what you have here in Atlanta, though, is you have a guy who you can feed repeatedly, but you don't have to. Because the past 3 years, you have drafted Kyle Pitts, you have drafted Drake London, and now you've drafted Bijan Robinson. So theoretically, you know, the past 3 years, you spent first-round capital on offensive players, on offensive skill players. So none of them should have to be relied on to be the man, right? Like King says here, fellas, who do y'all think has the most pressure on them this season? Is it Ritter having to put the team on his back and lead the team to winning, or Pitts coming back from injury to be the unicorn? I don't think either.
Yeah.
Like, I think, like, legitimately, I think that we have built a team that should be able to support itself.
Yes. Like, I would say Pitts probably had more pressure on him as a rookie for two reasons. One, highest drafted tight end of all time. So there's that. All the talk about him with the unicorn talk and all of that stuff to come out and then to come out and actually produce and actually have a 1,000-yard season was spectacular. You know, almost breaking the rookie tight end record.
Almost like Ditka's record.
Yeah, you know, he almost does that. Now he comes in last year, and yeah, you got Drake London, but he was a rookie, you know. He kind of didn't really have a whole lot of stuff after that, and we'll go ahead and get this real quick. Bring that up.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Appreciate Brad, that. Thank you, sir.
He says, just bought my Ritter jersey, ready to see us ball. That is pretty slick. Yep.
Yeah. But when it comes to this year, I don't think Ritter has any more or less pressure than just being the starting quarterback.
Yeah. That's an immense pressure in and on itself.
Yeah. Right? Just being the starting quarterback and it doesn't matter what anybody outside of the organization thinks. When you're the starting quarterback, you're expected to produce, or you're expected to, you know, at bare minimum, you're expected to do your job and don't be the reason why we lose if you can avoid it. Okay.
Yep.
Everybody's going to make mistakes. You're going to throw interceptions. You're going to throw pick sixes. Those happen. You can't go in expecting not to do those things. So you don't worry about that. You just go out and do the job as best you can. And as far as Pitts is concerned, he's coming back, to a completely different team than what he saw last year, defensively especially, but even offensively. Adding, you know, Algier really didn't take off until after Pitts' injury.
Right.
Like, once Pitts goes down, then all of a sudden the running game really starts to kick into gear. Algiers really starts to take off. So now you add him into that mix. You get Pitts back. Drake London's now a year older and with a quarterback that he seemingly has better chemistry with. You have a rookie quarterback coming back for his second year. You have Patterson, who's probably going to be out there as a playmaker on the outside a lot more. Right. Jonnu Smith comes in to help out. There's just so many more weapons about that you don't necessarily need to have a Kyle Pitts be the guy.
And that's the point I was making, is that you now have a team that is built to support each other.
Yes.
And it's built to take on mismatches if there is something that it's built to be able to exploit weaknesses of other teams. And yes. I think Bijan is going to be a big part of that, and not just as a runner. Like, and you know, we talk about a lot of times, like, you know, the tight ends being a young QB's best friend. Now you have one freakish tight end and another tight end who's very experienced in Jonnu Smith. So you have two really good tight ends to be that blanket. And then also the talent that Bijan has, you know, he can be a, you know, mismatched nightmare. You remember back in the day, it was James White with the Patriots.
Yep.
You know, he'd take a little 2-yard dump off from Tom Brady and go 7, 8, 10 yards. You know, and so Bijan has that kind of skill along with being able just to take a straight handoff and go 30, 40 yards. So these are things that I think are going to help Ridder. But, you know, these guys right here, Out of Your Falcon Minds, got a good point. He says, yeah, with who we've brought in, just need to learn to scheme, relax, and play ball. Yep. And that's what it is right now. It's just play ball, you know?
I think potentially what we'll see early on, in that first game, is they may try to, I'm going to say probably, depending on what we see during preseason, right? Through the training camp or preseason with Pitts, if he's, you know, worked out all the kinks, got back and, you know, he's you know, back to as close as we can get to year one or pre-injury Pitts, then I think you're going to see them try to get him involved early to try to, like, get that anxiety of, like, okay, I'm back. Am I really back? Let's get him involved early to get that, you know, get that kind of off his mind so he can just go back to being like, all right, let's go and play ball.
Let's go. Yep.
Do that.
Let's play ball.
Yeah. Then start working in your other guys. And then you know, once everybody, it's kind of like the Braves right now. The Braves right now are the best team in baseball. They have the best lineup 1 through 9. And because of that, if a guy like a Riley or an Olson or whatever goes 0-for-4 that night, it doesn't tank the entire team because everybody can contribute.
That's
you know, and everybody has confidence that everybody can contribute.
And confidence is a key that will spur on a lot of your team. King Seven says, okay, so okay, who do you think will take a bigger step forward, fellas, offense or defense? I was talking to a guy today at work, one of our vendors, and right now my biggest question mark is the defense. I'm pretty confident that the offense is going to take a step forward based off of what little sample size I saw in the you know, 4 games that Ridder started with the influx of Kyle Pitts being back, you know, Drake London another year, Bijan added to the mix, Tyler another year, and, you know, guys like Matt Collins who performed better than, you know, Olamide did. I feel like the offense is going to take a step forward. The one that I'm more curious about is what is the defense going to do?
Well, if the defense is even middle of the road, like total ranking, you know, not pass, not run, right, but just total ranking, if they're like anywhere from 10 to 15, maybe even 16, you know, like so just outside of the top 15, but if they're like middle of the road for the whole year,
that's a huge step up.
That is a ginormous step up.
The one thing I keep thinking about when I think about what this defense is, you know, Nielsen, no, has never been a DC in this league. He's never called, you know, strictly called plays, like fully game planned, whatever all the major things that a DC does. But he's never had a D line that was outside of the top 10. And they haven't had superstars on that D line for the Saints.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I mean, you could consider, like, their most consistent person was Cam Jordan. Outside of Cam Jordan, you know, it's been just, you know, a handful of different guys, not necessarily guys who, like, blew doors as far as extreme talent. So I'm excited that our D-line is going to take a step forward, for sure, I feel like. Because if nothing else, I don't – you know, you're pairing Ryan Nielsen's, you know, D-line experience, pressure packages, sim pressures, things like that, with Jerry Gray's, like, defensive back knowledge. And if they can come to jail quickly, it's going to be really impressive. You know, Chris brings up a good point. He says, Nielsen has got a lot of guys paid in this league. He did. He got Sheldon Rankins paid. That was one of the first names that come to mind. I mean, just off this past D-line alone, he got David Onyemata paid, Cy Tuttle paid. Davenport up in Minnesota. So these are things that have me excited. It's just hard for me to really look at what I think this defense is going to be.
What's going on, man?
I hadn't seen him in a minute.
I think that's the biggest, and I think we've talked about this before. The biggest difference between the two, we'll get this out of the way real quick.
Yep. Appreciate Jaffy Joe. He says, not going to cap. We'll feel much better if we got another great wide receiver and a good middle linebacker to bring, like bringing back Rashawn Evans. Two huge holes, just saying. Like the linebacker core, I'll have to agree with you there. The linebacker core is the part that still concerns me. Kind of what we were talking about earlier with the wide receivers. I think how it's going to get used, I don't think the wide receivers is as big of an issue as some of – I think we're so used to having the traditional, you know, Julio Jones, Roddy White, Harry Douglas, you know.
Yeah.
Or, you know, later on it was, you know, Julio Jones, Mohamed Sanu, and Justin Hardy. You know, clear cut, boom, boom, boom. And right now you have, you know, Drake London, Mac Hollins, Scotty Miller. You know what I'm saying? I can see why there is angst once you get past Drake London. But, you know, if you look at it like Kyle Pitts, Drake London, Janu Smith, you know, Mac Hollins, Scotty Miller, Bijan Robinson. You know what I'm saying? If you look at it like that, and you throw in Cordell Patterson, I think the wide receiver worry tends to slacken off some. But I will agree the linebacker core is kind of worrisome until I see it on the field. Like, who just put it up here? There it is. Like Fred Butt says, Troy Anderson is ready. That's the hope, right? The hope is that Troy Anderson is ready to take a step forward. The hope is that what you saw from Caden Ellis last year in New Orleans wasn't a one-year wonder, and that he is actually ready for a full-time starting position. Like, those are the big question marks at this time.
Yeah, and the hope is twofold for me. One is that Troy Anderson's ready, okay, makes more good plays than bad, right?
Right.
And on top of that, but the other big thing that I think we will hope to see out of this is the D-line being better, which then allows those linebackers to run free, which, you know, if they're allowed to run free, then it just becomes an issue of making sure you're staying disciplined and you're taking care of your responsibilities, not trying to play hero ball too much. I mean, right. I'm not saying that a guy can't have an instinct play and like he goes somewhere where he was, you know, technically not supposed to be and he ends up making a play. I'm not going to be like, how dare you? I mean, it was a great play regardless, but for the most part, defense is if you stay deep, disciplined, and you stay to your assignment. You know, you cover your lane, make sure you got those things done. Then you're going to make your share of plays. Caden Ellis is going to make his share of plays. Other guys are going to make their share of plays, and then the whole defense as a whole is better for it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the biggest change this year is going to be that defensive line potentially. If it does what it's supposed to do and lives up to what we think it's going to be, is able to do a better job of keeping the linebackers clean so that they can go and make those plays.
Atlanta supporter says the defense looks dangerous, but I got to see it for myself. That's where I'm kind of living it. Like in my mind, when I think about the pieces, when I think about the Jesse Bates, the Jeff Okuda, the Mike Hughes, D. Alford, Clark Phillips, you know, when I think about these guys, when I think about, you know, Bud Dupree and Lorenzo Carter and Calais Campbell and Eddie, Goldman in the middle with David Onyemata and, you know, even like Timmy Horn and Taquan Graham coming back. You know what I'm saying? When I think about these, I'm like, man, there's a chance that we could have a really good, really solid defense, but, you know, but I got to see it. Right. I mean, because
that's what I was trying to come up with earlier, you know, was the thing that the defense in general is the biggest question mark, not because, you know, of the lack of talent. The talent's there now. We can see the talent. Okay. We can see what we can imagine how this is going to go in our minds. But to the point you brought up earlier, Nielsen's never been a DC like he's going to be a DC here.
Right.
The defense just philosophy as a whole has probably changed. The defensive plays are, there's probably going to be a lot of the same stuff, different terminology though, probably, right. Or unless Nielsen translated or took that same terminology or whatever, but it doesn't really matter. The defense in general will change.
Yep.
All right. The offense, on the other hand, the reason why we're so able to like probably be a little bit closer to actually being truthful with what we think that the offense is going to be is because of that continuity, right?
Right.
You still Arthur Smith is the architect of that offense.
Yep.
He's been the architect of the offense for 2 years now, and we see he's been building towards.
The only piece of that brain trust you lost was Charles London.
Yes.
And who was the, you know, QB coach, right? It's not that he wasn't important. He very much so was, you know, so, but that's the only piece that you lose. So I don't think that it's going to be a major blow. And like I said, you've added so much like a more potent piece to it within in what you drafted in Bijan Robinson, as long as he somewhat lives up to the hype and doesn't get injured, right? Those that should all just make that work even better. I mean, I cannot get out of my mind that 10 play drive against Cleveland, where they ran the ball 10 straight times and scored a touchdown.
Yeah.
Like everybody in that building knew they were going to run the ball and they were still able to do it. And then like to a point where the only team that saw more stacked boxes was San Francisco. That was it. Like we saw eight man, like Tyler Algier saw eight man boxes, I think over 75% of his runs, and he was still able to run for over 1,000 yards. These are things that make me look at, okay, if this fifth round rookie, you know, running back can do this, like how much better should this guy be? And the fact that he doesn't have to shoulder the load, because you still have the fifth round running back who is there and able to take reps along with Cordarrelle Patterson, who is your chess piece, you know, whether it's, you know, moving him around, letting him catch the ball more, doing whatever, like the creativity that comes out of this offense. No, it's not Patrick Mahomes, but nobody's Patrick Mahomes. But what we have been able to do with the talent that we have, has me excited for the offense. The defense is just the biggest like question mark right now, because can we do the same thing? Right.
Right. And I'm hoping, I've talked about this before. I want the Falcons to be that team this year that I've seen it happen with a bunch of other teams where 1 year defense stinks to high heaven. Right. They go into the offseason, make some moves, bring a new defensive coach, do all this stuff, and then they come back next year and it's like totally different. It's like they just took the defense of a different team and implanted it, where it goes from one of the worst defenses to like one of the better defenses. Not necessarily I don't need this defense to be the number one defense in the NFL.
Nope.
If it is, I will be ecstatic. Oh, dude,
I'll be over the moon.
I will be over the moon.
Yeah.
But if they're just like, if they even make top 10, I would be over the moon. But if we're just at least middle of the road, 15, you know, 14, 15, 16 in that range, to where it's not just not, I don't necessarily feel like every single time it gets down to a game winning drive by the other team, I'm not just, my first thought is immediately like, are we going to have enough time left? You know, like I don't want that mentality. And, you know, even if we have the number one defense, we can still lose those type of games. It doesn't, it's not a guarantee, but it makes you feel better to know like your team has done those things, has made the stops, and has done it on a more consistent basis than they don't. Right.
That's the thing.
Especially against bad, you know, the lower ranked teams of the league. Like we've given up game winning stuff to like some of the worst teams, some of the lower end teams in the league. So, you know, if we give it up to the Kansas City Chiefs, or we give it up to the Bills or the 49ers or something like that, even with a top tier defense, like that's understandable. But if you have a middle of the road or better defense that's giving it up to like last year's, you know, or, you know, the Jets of the past, the Browns of the past, those kinds of teams, that's what's frustrating is when those kinds of teams are able to do those things against you.
Right. King Seven says, true, JR, that's going to make our play action tough. I think that's what's going to motion, play action shifts. Those are the kind of things that they're trying to get to. Out of your Falcon Mind says, Pitt's usage might have been better last year had we had someone who could throw the ball. Defense definitely expect more balance this year. You can, on that note, because like Wallace, you know, y'all hit some really good points all in a row, so I'm trying to catch back up. He says, but this offense is going to be totally different than it was last year with Pitts. Pitts will get used more than he was last year. Here's the thing. Like, you take a look at the 2021 offense and the 2022 offense, and you can really see a coaching staff that can mold itself to the people that they have. So I would definitely think, because I keep going back and I encourage all y'all to go back and look at the numbers, the efficiency, however you want to put it, of the 2020 Titans team. That team was probably close to the pinnacle of Arthur Smith's offense. It was almost a perfectly balanced offense. They used shifts, motions. You had Derrick Henry. You had two guys who both almost like combined caught for over 2,000 yards. Derrick Henry, who ran for over 2,000 yards. You had two tight ends that combined for almost 1,000 yards and like think 14. No, it was close to double-digit touchdowns. It was the way he was spreading the ball around for the, you know, 2020 Titans, ultimately, I think, is what we're trying to build here, right? So, yes, I do expect the offense to look different this year than it did last year. Everybody is so hung up on the run game, and I do think the run game is very important to the identity of this team, but I think it's going to end up being so much more than just the run game. And I think you have a passer who is potentially on the level of Ryan Tannehill, and that's what you need for this offense. Like, yeah. So,
I'll put this up here. You know, anybody else think Kyle Pitts does a Jimmy Graham and plays a lot of wide receiver with Johnny Smith at tight end when Mac Hollins is not on the field, Patterson in a little bit. I mean, all of those. Yes, absolutely. Yes,
every bit of it.
Like you're going to see, you're going to see Pitts out wide. You're going to see him in the slot. You're going to see him in line. You're going to see him probably in the backfield. You're probably going to see him anywhere they can put him to try to get him a mismatch. They're going to try to do it.
The same
goes for Bijan Robinson. Same goes for, you know, Drake London, though. You know, anybody short of like your best cornerback is probably a mismatch against Drake London. So, you know, they're probably going to have somebody follow. And if they don't follow him, then that makes it even easier to find that mismatch.
You're going to, I predict now that you're going to see Drake London like line up in the slot a good bit, you know, as being that like power slot to, you know, go across the middle of the field, as we were talking about earlier. Yeah. So, yes, I think you're going to see these guys all over the field, which is the point. It is the something we have been talking about. It's that positionless football. You know, if you're able to, we've talked about it before, come out with, you know, two running backs, as in like Patterson and Bijan, you come out with two tight ends with Janu Smith and Kyle Pitts, and you have Drake London out there, you can, within two motions, be in a five wide set and, you know, not lose any receiving ability. and not lose any real speed, because, you know, barring that Kyle Pitts comes back healthy, that's a tight end that runs a 4.3 or a 4.4. Like, he could take the top off the defense.
Yeah.
Drake London has shown that he's savvy enough to be able to separate and get open, you know, and, you know, get open deep. Anybody remember the 40-yard, you know, flick against Tampa Bay? Like, so with the talent that we have, we're able to, you know, come out in what it looks like a heavy personnel, motion out into what then is five wide, or, you know, then you can keep that same personnel, move down the field and run up a, you know, traditional play. So I'm excited on that sense.
Yeah, the versatility is the thing that is most exciting. Like, you know, praying, you know, knocking on wood, whatever, like everybody gets through healthy, you know, through training camp, through preseason and what have you. I am absolutely like super excited to see what this offense is going to be able to do this year. But I'm, you know, I'm just as excited, probably a little bit more nervous on the defensive side, but I'm, you know,
oh, I'm happy excited with, about what that,
I'm excited to see, to see hopefully an actual legitimate NFL pass rush.
I've seen one of those in quite a while. It's all right. I want to switch gears here just a little bit and see if we can't have some fun these last few minutes that we got here, last 20 minutes or so. And I want to ask a question. I saw it pop up on Sports Illustrated on Twitter or whatever, and I want to throw it out to the chat. So should the Falcons retire number two? Now, you have Bijan wearing number seven as it stands right now.
Yes.
So some people can argue, and I tend to be one of those some people that can argue that Ryan was the best player that we've had, you know, in the franchise. Now, I'm pretty sure King's going to disagree. I knew it. I knew it.
I saw that coming.
Oh, I did too. But it got thrown out there. And I myself am not one for, like, necessarily retiring numbers on just in general. I don't think there is a number that's sacred. Now, you might want to give it a little bit before you hand out that number again. Like, I might have thought some kind of way had, you know, last year, the first year without Ryan, you know, some insignificant person come trotting out with number two on.
Wasn't there somebody that already has the number two this year? I thought somebody already had it.
I don't think so. I think, I know Koo went to, six. Is that right?
I think so.
Or three. No, three. No, he was at seven. And so Koo might have went to six. Anyway. But yeah, I don't think that numbers, in my opinion, I don't think should be retired. But I don't know. Hold on. King Javi says, I also say no, retire seven before two. I don't know about that, dog. I get what Vic did. Like, I will not deny the greatness of Vic. But if you just want to talk about what the player has done for this team, you know, Ryan has, to me, has done a lot more and a lot more consistently. But let's see. King says the only number should be retired is 21. He made the franchise. He made this franchise, to be honest. I agree that if you're going to retire a number, retiring, you know, Deion's number is up there. But the deal here is, though, Deion went to play for, what, three or four more teams?
Yep.
You know, once he left here, it's not like he played the majority of his career here. You know, like, you know, Tony's bringing up number two and number 11 are off limits. No one can even wear those numbers again. Like, to me, if you're going to retire numbers, the criteria is, you know, play either all of your career or the majority of your career.
Yeah.
So,
I'll say this, like, you know, the biggest difference is there's only, by and large, like there's only so many numbers like for offensive linemen that you generally use. Right. And so you can't go around saying like, you know, well, we got these three really awesome, like, let's just say for some reason, we go the next 5 years with Matthews at left tackle, and he just continues to be the guy, and we end up winning a Super Bowl, maybe more, okay, in the next 5 years. Right. Okay, let's say that happens, and then you got Lindstrom, maybe even McGarry, and those guys are just balling out of their minds for the next 5 years, part of like one of the best offensive lines in football for the next 5 years, all those things, and we win a Super Bowl, make, you know, a couple, you know, make some appearances in some championship games and all that stuff. You know, if you retire those three numbers, now all of a sudden that's just three numbers that you don't have any more offensive linemen can use. And it's just one of those, it's different from baseball. Baseball's just got so many more numbers. And those are, you know, kind of, you know, guys can go all the way up to like 99, I think, and all the way as low as zero and all those things. So,
well, I mean, you know, numbers are all over the place now in football. Anybody can wear just about anything. There's,
yeah, but you know, offensive linemen generally are going to be in that 50, 60, 70 range.
Right.
So they're much more limited. But if I was going to retire any numbers, and I'd have to look his up to find it for sure. Okay. There are some guys that I would consider, one being number two for Ryan, because, you know, I liked Vic. You know, he was exciting when he was here.
Right.
But the stuff that he did just puts a black mark on that. And, you know, I've forgiven him for that.
Well, yeah, of course.
But at the end of the day, it's still something that occurred. Okay. So I'm not going to retire his number for that simple fact alone. Okay. That's just a me thing. That's my personal opinion. Everybody's entitled to theirs. Number two, statistically and just accomplishment wise, is the at bare minimum the best quarterback that has ever played for the Falcons.
That's kind of my idea.
At bare minimum, whether you say he's the best player of all time, everybody can argue whether it was him or Deion, because Deion is in the Hall of Fame. But the only other guy that I would even consider, would probably be Tommy Nobis.
Right.
Like Tommy Nobis, I don't know what his number was, you know, burn me at the stake. But whatever his number was, you know, if I was going to retire, be him, maybe a Jeff Van Note. Okay. And then maybe Matt Ryan. Those are the three guys out of the entire history of the Falcons that I would consider to be guys that would allow him to do his thing.
Now, King, I'm gonna disagree with you here on is before people were ready to run, to my understanding, people were ready to run Roddy White out of town before Ryan got here, calling him a bust. So, and I do seem to remember that he made Harry Douglas a 1,000-plus yard receiver. So, yes. In the year that, you know, Roddy White went down and Julio Jones went down, like, he was still out there dealing. So, but I get it. You know, I don't think that is the case, because if you want to get real technical, I don't care how you want to slice it in this sense, Harry Douglas left the Falcons and did nothing. Julio Jones left the Falcons, went to two different teams, couldn't stay healthy, but didn't really do nothing. Okay. So that's my argument there. Now, I will agree with King Jaffe. I did not like the way we handled the Roddy White situation at the end there. Did not like that whatsoever. I felt like they did okay. King. He says, Matt left the Falcons and did nothing. You're not wrong. You're not wrong about that.
Yeah. I was like that. That's probably the one time I have really pulled for another team to do really like potentially win the Super Bowl, because like the year before he gets there, like that offensive line was one of the best in the NFL. They had weapons. They had everything. And I'm like, finally, this guy gets an offensive line. He gets a defense. He gets some weapons, all this other stuff. And then it literally all falls apart as soon as he shows up.
I did chuckle at that.
I felt so bad.
Now, look, but, I can't. I said before, and I said it to you, I've said it on chat, I've said it to my wife, when he got traded to the Colts, everybody, like, there was people who went, like, and jumped on the Colts bandwagon. I was like, no, I mean, he's not on my team anymore. I'm not rooting for him. That's just how I conduct myself. Oh, yeah, definitely. Uncle Javon says, don't forget what Matt did with Leonard Hankerson. Yeah, exactly. And also, you know, Russell Gage. Right. He made a gunner on special teams. Anyway.
but here's the thing. It's like Patrick Mahomes. That dude's had weapons. Okay. Guy out of freaking Buffalo. Josh. I can't remember his last name now.
Talking about Josh Allen?
Josh Allen. He's got weapons. You know, I mean, everybody's got weapons. Like, you know, but.
All right. So he's saying, okay, better weapons, Vic or MR2, honestly. Gonzalez, White, Jones, Freeman, et cetera, done more for Matt Ryan than he did for them. I'm just saying. I don't know.
Here's what I'll say. Here's what I will say to
King. I knew I'd get the chat rolled up on this one.
Yeah. I'll say this to Jaffe. And I'll say this to King Seven, okay? If Vic had, if we talk about Atlanta Falcons era Vic, okay, we're not talking about Philadelphia. We're not talking about what he became after he came back from prison.
Right.
Okay, if we're talking about the Falcons version of Mike Vic, even if he had those weapons, I don't think he does much better than what he already did. Because that man – fully admitted did not do the work. He did not put in the work. He did not pay attention to the playbook. He didn't study the playbook. He didn't do any of those things because he just knew he was more talented, physically gifted than just about anybody else field. And that would pull him out of so many things.
I would love to have seen like the Philadelphia version of Vic in the early part of Atlanta, the version of Vic that was like, okay, I have to put in the work as well off the field to, I think like this, the sky, like, you know, I would almost agree with Jaffe. If he'd have put in the work and had those level of weapons, it would have probably been unstoppable, especially in that era of football where they were not used to seeing a quarterback move like that.
But it all starts with it doesn't matter what weapons he has around him. Okay. If he's not putting in the work to be an NFL quarterback, okay. And it doesn't matter if he's a Mike Vick kind of person. It doesn't matter if he's a Brady kind of person. Right. The reason that Brady is the guy he is and was the player that he was over his 20,000 seasons that he played, okay, is because, you know, you say whatever you want about it. That man was in there and was studying that playbook. He was a film junkie. The man practiced as harder than probably anybody else in the league. Repetition after repetition after repetition after repetition after, I mean, he lived and breathed it to where it was second nature to him. Vic did not do that.
Nope.
He admits to not doing that. So whether, you know, I would have loved, we kept hearing this season after season. They kept saying like, oh, you know, this year we're going to see a much more mature Vic and we're going to see a much more of this Vic and we're going to see, and they kept waiting for the Superman like explosion. You know, for him to like, for the light to click on, and it never did because he didn't put in the work to do it.
Right.
That's what it boils down to. So, at the end of the day, I'm not taking anything away from Vic the player when he was here. He did some great things.
Oh, yeah. He had some highlight moments. He brought a culture to this, like a buzz to this team that had not been here, you know, to that point. And you know, he made the Falcons, you know, must see TV. So that forever grateful for, you know, absolutely forever grateful for, how many players on a regular basis, you know, how many people are fans of the Falcons nowadays because of it. Right.
Absolutely. And
so dead up, forever, you know, forever grateful for that. But that kind of, this talk then leads into this other question that I figure I'll keep the chat riled up for. But is Matt Ryan a Hall of Famer? Is, like, you know, Pro Bowler, MVP of the league, you know, orchestrated the second best in offense in NFL history, whether the deniers, well, not deniers, but the people who were never really like Matt Ryan fans will, you know, say that that was, you know, Shanahan. So do you think that Matt Ryan is a future Hall of Famer? And I ask you,
I think he should be. Do I think he will be? I think if he does, it won't be first ballot. I mean, you look at in his I want to say the first two trips for him until 2012, I think his first couple trips to the playoffs were not very successful. Right. Not necessarily, he didn't necessarily play his best either, but like everything just kind of fell around. But then once you get past that to the 2012 season, every time he went to the playoffs, like, he showed up,
right,
every single time. And he has had, you know, when you look at just, you know, quarterback play in general in the playoffs, like, him as a quarterback and his play ranks up there with the tops in NFL history, you know, and especially, like, he's got one of the highest, if not the highest, like, passer ratings in a Super Bowl.
Right. Yeah, like, so, it's right. His play, because, like, the question, like, especially when you start talking about quarterbacks and, you know, the Hall of Fame and stuff like that, you get into the idea that did they win a Super Bowl or not? Because, like, King brings up here, he says, honestly, no, I think he's not on the tier of Breeze, Brady, Rodgers, and Big Ben or Peyton. Just can't see it. Okay, so, like, when we think about it like that, like, what separates him from those guys, most of the time people are going to say Super Bowls, right?
Yeah.
And so the idea that the Super Bowl is what separates you as being a you know, Hall of Fame quarterback, I will then point to guys like Joe Flacco, Nick Foles, Trent Dilfer. These guys have Super Bowl rings. So yeah. Are they deserving to be in the Hall of Fame? A no. guy like Dan Marino never won the Super Bowl. Is considered yep. one
he
of the greatest.
He only went to one.
Right.
He only went to one in his, like, right. I think either his rookie season or his second season. I can't remember which one.
Right. And so with that being said, like, so do we, I think because of the historic nature of the 2016 Super Bowl, which of course the NFL on this today decided to post that whole daggum game on Twitter, which I was like, thanks, guys. But anyway, like, does the historic nature of how that Super Bowl went down, like, then put a cloud around Ryan, right? Yeah. Which could potentially, like, keep him from going in because of the way, not that he lost the Super Bowl, but it's the way he lost the Super Bowl. You know, the way the team itself lost. So, I love, look, King Jaffe, I love your determination, brother. Keep it up. I love the fact
yes,
that.
Absolutely.
Like, so my question, I guess, Jaffe, like, do you then, like, hate on Joe Montana because he had Jerry Rice? Because isn't that the biggest debate? Who made
he had,
who?
He had Jerry Rice, he had John Taylor, he had Roger Craig, whatever. He had, and on top of, like, and that was from a different era. Like, yeah. It was much easier to keep teams together. And he had, like, the best offensive line in football. He had the right. best defensive line in football. He had the best right. defense in football. Like, and, you know, so.
So, yeah, it would be interesting to see how that debate rages on. Like, I myself – like, I'm really weird on the stats thing. I think that for the era that Ryan played in, by the time, like Patrick Mahomes retires and Josh Allen retires and Justin Herbert retires, those guys are going to be like, because the game itself is just different. Ryan came in at the start of the change of the, you know, the change of the way football was played. Like, he came in when it was a real full swing of, we are just going to pretty much air it out every play, you know?
Yeah.
And that was that started a stats boom. So you're really going to have to sit there and look at it like, okay, is the stats worth it? Is the stats enough worth him getting in? And that's the question that I don't know. Like, even as big of a Ryan stan as I am, I don't know if the stats alone are worth it, because you had a lot of, you know, what, 4 or 5 years where the teams themselves just was not a good team.
No, and, but he I think the most likely scenario is Matt Ryan will probably not be in the Hall of Fame. I hope he is.
Yeah.
I think he deserves it. But I also think a guy like Jesse Tuggle deserves it.
Right.
But that guy played on some rotten teams.
Right.
Absolutely bad teams. If Jesse Tuggle played for, say, the Steelers, okay, and they had even if it wasn't to the Super Bowl wins, it was just making it to the playoffs and being part of those defenses so that, you know, the spotlight was on him because he was getting coverage because he was on those teams, I think he's a surefire Hall of Famer. No doubt about it.
Right.
So at the end of the day, you know, like and it's not just Ryan, it's not just Tuggle. There's probably lots of guys.
Oh, there's tons. Like, we can ask, you can legitimately ask the same kind of question about Phillip Rivers. Like, does Phillip Rivers deserve to be in the Hall of Fame? You know, does, you know, a guy like, you know, just like quarterback wise, realistically, you know, does Eli Manning deserve to be in the Hall of Fame? Like, he's got two rings. He's got two rings. But, you know, there were times that, you know, he led the league in interceptions and stuff like, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, what metric are, you know, do you look at to say that this guy deserves to be there or doesn't? Which obviously is not one that I have to. And for the Hall of Fame, like, you could look at stuff like, you know, King wants to know, better quarterback, Russell Wilson or Matt Ryan. I'd take Matt Ryan. Myself, like, if you're talking about just his whole career, you know, at least at this point. So, Tony says there are several quarterbacks in the Hall of Fame that haven't won a Super Bowl or NFL championship pre, Super Bowl. There are. And so the question is, like, do you think he ranks among there? And it depends on what metric you want to look at. You know, whether you, a lot of it's going to have to do is whether you like the guy or not. Like, I chuckle with King quite a bit because I know for a shadow of a doubt that he don't like Matt Ryan. And so, like, we need, like, anytime we have these kind of conversations, I already know what, you know, his response is going to be. And I can almost guarantee you that somebody on the other end is looking at me and saying, well, I already know what his response is going to be. Like, Matt Ryan was the first, you know, quarterback that I ever watched. Like, he was the reason why I wanted to learn more about this game and, like, study it. And, you know, I went back in history and watched, you know, the Marinos and the Vicks and the Montanas, but I didn't grow up watching football, you know. Yeah. So Matt Ryan, for me, is my quarterback. So I will always, my bias will always lean towards Ryan. I try to, like, you know, I try to keep it out, but it does. It's there, you know?
Yeah, well, it's like, that's the reason why I was hoping he would at least make it to another Super Bowl and play well in it, you know, if not win it.
Right.
Because, I would really like to see – I would have liked to have seen him – I would have loved to have seen him do it here in Atlanta. But if he couldn't do it here in Atlanta, he moved on. If he went to Indianapolis and they lived up to their hype, what they were supposed to be, then I would have loved to see him hoist the Lombardi – even if it's, you know, with another team. I would have loved to see it happen, because then if that were to happen, he's a surefire Hall of Famer. There's questions now because he didn't get there.
And because like Stafford probably has an easier like way in to the Hall of Fame because he went to, you know, Los Angeles and, you know, was able to win a Super Bowl with the Rams. So, yeah. You know, in your mind, like who's a better quarterback, Stafford or Ryan? Like those are more interesting comparisons to me. Like,
I think you look at Stafford. I mean, the guy didn't have always the best, but he had like one of the best wide receivers that has ever played the game.
Yeah, and Calvin Johnson.
And like, I think he with that same guy, he went like 0-16.
Right.
Like, so you know, so I think at the end of the day, you can have weapons all day long if you're not, but if you're not either you don't have the team around you to allow it to happen. Or you just don't, you know, for whatever reason, you're just not connecting properly and in the right ways and at the right times and all those. There's a lot more than just, oh, he had weapons or right. He didn't have weapons or whatever. Tom Brady won how many Super Bowls with who? Right. You know, I mean, he had Randy Moss and he came the closest to perfection with Randy Moss. But even then, they still lost the Super Bowl that year.
Right. That's the reason why I love this game. It's a team sport. All the way around. It's a team sport. All right, we're going to end on a high note, or at least something fun in the last few minutes. What was your favorite? Who was your favorite player to play in the Georgia Dome? For me, outside of the obvious, I'm going to take Ryan and Julio off the table as they both bracket me back here. I'm going to say my favorite player to watch in the Georgia Dome. I really enjoyed watching John Abraham. I really enjoyed watching. As the first and only time I've ever felt like, you know, there was somebody on that side of the line to actually fear, you know, and that was fun. The fact that, you know, he had the nickname the Predator, and it was just super fun. And then on the offensive side of the ball, I would say I'm always a sucker for a run game. Have been for a really long time. So, like, prime Michael Turner was two tons of fun. Now, granted that all that dates me, as you know, other people may have some older players that they like to play or like to talk about. But King says Vic or Dion, which I totally understand that.
Absolutely.
Nick says Vic. What was your answer?
So I got asked this question on the Out of Your Falcon Mind podcast. And the answer I gave then, I'll go ahead and give it here. I'll give an offensive guy too, because it was a defensive guy. It was Dion. Like watching him, you know, it was still real early in me watching football and actually enjoying it. Like I remember football coming on when I was like in the, mid 80s or whatever. And just my dad would turn it on Sundays, cutting off our cartoons. And we didn't have any other TV in the house. And it was just like, football, so boring. And then, but I grew into it. So early 90s, you know, watching Vic, watching Dion do his thing. Was a really special thing, like watching him return punts, watching him basically go a whole game without anybody throwing in his direction because he was so good.
Right.
Probably the most amazing play, like most dominant player I've probably ever seen play for the Falcons. The other guy I'll give is on the offense, and that is a guy that came around mid and then into the late 90s, and it was Jamal Anderson, especially the 98 season.
Oh, Dougie Bird. I mean, to impact the team the way he did, the fact that they're still, like, whether it's, like, trying to be insulting, like opposing teams will do it, like, yep. It is still very much a major part of the fabric of this team.
Exactly, and he was a guy that was very much of like the Willie Andrews of the world, the modern day like Algier kind of guy. He was big back, more likely to run through you than around you. He could, he had some moves. He could get around people. And he had some decent speed. He wasn't like top end or anything like that, but he had some decent speed. I love just watching him just like, especially back then they had the giant pads.
Oh, yeah.
And like the old, the saying goes, run behind your pad. That man would get behind those pads and run as hard as he could and run through some people. And it was, watching that team that year, him do that to teams over and over and over again. And then, the play action pass would come out and they throw it, down the field on, and get the big plays. Basically kind of like what we're wanting to see a lot with this current offense, which is we're going to run it down your throat. Then when you're really gearing up to stop it because nothing else has worked, Mud Duck.
Mud Duck. The Falcons was Mud Duck. See if y'all are like, yeah, Todd McClure. Mud Duck was awesome.
Yep. Absolutely.
Nick had a good one. Like Tony G, watching Tony Gonzalez play, like you knew you were watching greatness. You know,
yes.
Even if it was like greatness at the end of his career, you knew you were watching greatness.
It was to the point where you got down in the end zone. Everybody knew Tony Gonzalez was going to get it, and they knew it,
right?
Absolutely knew it, and he still got open. Matt still got him the ball. And it was a beautiful thing to see, to the point where literally Belichick was like, that dude's not going to beat me, to the point where I'm going to put two guys on him.
Yep.
They're going to jam him at the line of scrimmage and not let him off the line of scrimmage. Yep. They wouldn't even let him in the end zone.
Exactly.
Like literally wouldn't. So, that was it was a beautiful thing to watch. When everybody knew what was coming and it still happened and everybody's just like, well,
yep. King says, Kearney and Keith Brooking. I think he means best Falcons, defensive duo.
Yeah.
They just clicked, shake my head, missed those guys.
Kearney. Absolutely. Brooking. I think you saw, whether this is a him thing or this is the defense kind of fell apart around him and wasn't able to protect him as well. But he basically became the guy that like he almost like for at least a couple seasons, maybe even more than that, two, three, four seasons, something like that. He led the league in tackles like year in and year out, it felt like. But it was always like he had very, very few tackles for loss.
Yeah.
Or anything like that. It was always five. He was always the guy 5 yards down,
the field. I came in late on that one. I remember him being in the 6 yard sheriff.
Yep.
All right. So Tony says,
then it was like 2008. I remember what it was, Ryan's rookie year. We go into the playoffs. Everything's going,
Oh, King, you were killing me, dude. I'm loving it. He says, chat question, who is Quintarius Lopez? I would imagine anybody watching us knows who Quintarius Lopez is.
Nick, I'll say this. With Michael Turner, probably my favorite, it was a game against the Kansas City Chiefs that I know you've seen it. And if you haven't seen it, the game, you've probably seen at least a gif of it or something like that. Michael Turner went off on these boys that game.
Okay.
But the one I'm thinking of is this one where they've been running it down their throats the whole game. And then they're like, Falcons are deep in their own territory. They hand it off to, the 10-yard line or something like that. They hand it off to Turner. It's around the left side, and he gets out there, turns it upfield. There's a linebacker that runs out, goes to grab him, grabs him by his hips, and just tries to like dead drop to like as a dead weight to try to bring him down. And he literally drags that guy like he's on a sled for like 10 yards. And the guy lets go, and he goes for like another 10 yards after that. It was an amazing. Amazing run.
Back in his prime, Michael Turner was one of my favorites there for sure.
Well, because when he first got here, he didn't have the tread, right? Or he still had tread.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so when he got here, he was a guy that would run through you, but he's also a guy that would, you know, he didn't have great, like, lateral movement, but he had enough to, like, make you miss mostly. But he was also a guy that could break the big one. He had enough speed to, once he got out in the open, he could run away from you. You know, so he had that early on. That only lasted like two seasons.
Good Lord, because Malarkey ran him into the ground.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, we could do this all night.
I'll say this with King. Dunn, it was fun to watch. You know, how many guys miss. He would run into a pile and end up 20 yards down the field somehow. I literally watched him a game where it was to the right. It literally looked like a rugby scrum that he ran into, just a pile of giant bodies. He goes in, disappears, and then all of a sudden you just see this thing squirt out the other side, and it's done running down the field for like 40, 50 yards. He gets caught, but he did. And I was like, I don't know what happened there. I don't know how he did it, but he did.
Just glad he did it. Yep. All right, folks, well, that's going to wrap it up for us tonight. We're 1 week closer to camp, which is awesome. So we'll keep your eye on the channel as we will wrap up our USS ATL series with the AFC.
I remember that, King, by the way.
Yeah, we'll wrap that series up this weekend, and we'll be back live next Tuesday to sit here and chat with y'all and have a good time. So, as always, y'all can follow me on Twitter, which is Grimm1128, GRIMM1128. Jonathan?
You can follow me at Jonathan M. Holder. Come by and say hi. And Ryan, Hall of Fame, Vic, not. Yes.
You can get people throwing things at you. If y'all are on the threads, also with a pound for pound, you can search them out and on the new threads app, and we're over there as well. So anyway, y'all take it easy, and like I said, just keep your eye on the channel. And as always, Falcons fans, rise up.
Rise up.